Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with our pal Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for over 30 years, beginning at Factory Mechanics Training School in Wolfsburg, Germany, back in 1979. Obviously an expert on German and European cars, but he knows the American stuff too, so give us a call. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment below our wall post on Facebook, facebook.com/wamcradio. You can tweet your questions and comments at @wamcvoxpop. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But by all means, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 2551. Gordon, you are back. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Your first show of 2014.
Yes, I guess it is.
And you brought a guest.
I have a special guest, my daughter Emma, who's here on her finishing up her holiday break from college.
And it's a long break.
Oh, my goodness. We just talked about that. It's long enough.
5 weeks, eh?
Yeah.
All right, so you're ready for a little break.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, fair enough. And while you're here, Emma, let's get the inside scoop. You know, your dad and I are old-timers, and we're not really hip to this texting while driving thing, but as a youngster, I assume that you text and drive all the time, right?
No, I actually don't.
Are you sure?
I make it a point to put my phone somewhere I can't touch it while I drive, but also I don't trust myself, like... I don't trust my coordination enough to drive and text.
See, you've been trained well.
I guess so, yeah. Good teacher.
She's heard a lot of my ranting and raving about not doing it because I tow in a lot of vehicles.
Yeah.
And a lot of these are not just broken down. These are wrecks. And I had a wreck last summer. And I know a guy who was following this person down the highway. And he said the vehicle just slowly went off to the right, went into the guardrails. This is 55, 60 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Tangled up in the guardrails, tipped over, spun around, and the guardrail wire hung on to the left front wheel.
Ooh.
And it prevented the truck from going into trees. And when he got to the scene, he looked in to see if the occupant was okay, and the individual still had the device in her hand.
Was she
texting?
She was still texting?
Had the device in her hand.
Wow.
That was scary.
Now, Emma, do your friends do this?
Yeah, I do have some friends who, I guess, think they're good at texting and driving, but obviously, if I see it, I tell them, like, here, let me do that for you.
Well, here's the problem. When you get a text, and you really can't control that, so say it's on your seat next to you when you're driving, when you get a text, and you hear the blink or whatever, do you look over and just see what it is?
I mean, if I think it's something important, I'll ask... like voice control, because everyone has smartphones these days.
Not me.
I'll ask a voice control
yeah,
to check my messages, and if it's important, I guess I can tell it my voice control to respond, but I don't ever do it myself.
All right, fair enough. We're not putting you on a lie detector, so we'll say that you're being very responsible, and we'll go to the phones with Gordon Fricke, 800-348-2551. Nancy in Stamford, Vermont, you're on.
Hello. I have a question. I purchased a used car, and I went to get it inspected, and it had a cracked frame or a beginning of a welded frame. Is that okay?
Well, that's kind of a gray area. How old of a vehicle is it, Nancy?
97.
What kind of car is it?
It's a Jeep Cherokee.
And can you tell me the area of the frame where this repair looks to be?
Towards the back.
Way, way, way in the back towards the very end?
I'd say the middle.
Okay.
The middle.
Now, I'm not sure about Vermont State, but we do New York State inspections. And the way the inspection regulations or things to check is written, the frame cannot be cracked or rusted in areas where the suspension attaches, which could cause a safety issue if it broke or let the suspension go out of where it's supposed to be.
Right.
So what they're saying is you could have an area of the frame that is rusted or got repaired, and if it's not affecting holding of the suspension, it's kind of okay. But I think somebody with, you know, your safety in mind should look at it and say, I think this is okay, or I think this is not okay, and use a professional's advice.
And if it's not okay, the car's done, yeah?
The car's done.
Because I received a recall notice about the Jeep, and actually it spoke about this, that if there is any issues with the underbody, especially around the gas tank, you know, on impact from a rear collision, the underbody would catch fire.
Oh, yes. Wonderful.
Yes, I know that there is a action or recall regarding that. I would then take that Jeep to a Jeep dealer, call them up, make an appointment for that recall, and have it checked out.
Okay.
It's worth being safe in this case.
Thanks
Absolutely.
For the call. We appreciate
You're
it
You're welcome.
Much.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. David and Red Hook, you're next with Gordon Fricke.
Hey there, how are you? I have a question about the emergency response systems that are built into a lot of modern car computers now, where you get in an accident and someone comes on the line automatically and you're asking for help, and they market them on television as being really handy because an operator comes on and talks to you while emergency is dispatched. To me, these are also sort of bugs that are built into the car, because it sounds like from news stories I've read that the police, when a car is stolen or a carjacking happens and there's a kidnapping, they can turn on these listening devices that are used by these emergency response systems automatically or at will when there's the need to. And it just seems like a giant capacity for, economic espionage and just listening without permits and all these other potential hazards that go well outside of how they're marketed as just a very safe emergency response system. Is there a way to when you buy one of these cars, to disable these things, to actually get into the computer with an automatic, the manufacturer's little computer system at a shop and say, okay, let's turn off completely the hardware that allows for the car to be bugged?
Right, yeah. That's a very interesting question, because at first when OnStar was in General Motors cars and a lot of others have used that system, at first it sounds wonderful because if you get in a crash, the airbags deploy, it immediately sends out a signal that an airbag deployment occurred, could be people hurt, send help or call. What you're saying, though, is true. It's also a GPS unit. It's a tracking device. Somebody could tell where your vehicle is at all times, whether you like it or not. The question of disabling it is, I'm not sure, but if it has a dedicated fuse, you could pull the fuse or find the module that's in control of the OnStar and unplug it. But I'm not sure, I don't know where the technology is and how much access they have, if they can still track you or they're not going to listen in or read your check engine light or your airbag computer. But I think that would, if you could disable the device by unplugging it or disabling the fuse, that would shut it down.
Mm-hmm. Is it something that automobile mechanics are trained on understanding, or is it something that you got to bring to the dealer?
No.
And it's only through Ford or Mercedes, their proprietary system?
No.
That they...
No, you see, the thing of it is, this is the way I view it. You own the car and every piece of equipment in that car. And if you want to unplug that OnStar system, I don't see why you can't do that. It's yours. You could take it out and throw it out the window. Well, that'd be littering, but you could.
Yeah, let's not do that.
You could throw the thing away.
Yeah,
so,
avoid my warranty, but whatever.
No.
I can have a private conversation about my business,
yeah,
and not have it potentially be bugged by,
yeah,
the government trying to find
no,
out.
It's an interesting way to start the show.
Any mechanic could look up the fuse orientation and or the location of the module and at your request unhook it.
All right, David, thanks, and good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, appreciate it. Interesting call. Wow. Tommy in Neversink, you're up.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
My comment is, everyone check your discount schedule on your insurance, because I found one on there that said over 55 and retired, which seems to be my reality. I called them up, and they're taking over $200 off each six-month bill.
Nice. Hey, that's great. Good
so
advice.
Check it. They're not going to give it to you unless you ask.
Okay, that's great advice. What's your question?
My question is, my CD player works sometimes, and it doesn't sometimes. Back and forth. I don't know why that is.
So when it doesn't work, is the whole thing shutting down and no lights are lit? Or
no, it has power. It won't take in the CD. Well, you can sort of force the CD in.
But it won't accept it, and you don't hear the noises where the CD's being queued up.
Right, and it's not reading it. It's not.
Yeah. Unfortunately, probably many years ago, that could have been repaired, but I don't think anybody's fixing that stuff anymore. So if the machine is still lit up and operating, but it won't play, I think it's an internal problem, and you're really only forced to replacing it. We're exchanging it for another one like it.
Sorry. Although you could, blow some forced air through there. Maybe there's some dust over the sensor that senses the CD and things like that.
Right. There may be a few things that you could do to attempt to get the thing to work. But pretty much this stuff is sealed up, and there's no repair information available on it. So I think you're kind of stuck there, unless you can find somebody that'll take it apart and reassemble it and see if it works, you know?
Yeah, it obviously, it's a connection that comes in and out, you know, because it works fine when it's working, and it'll work again, and it'll stop working. This pattern's been in existence for a year now.
Yeah, if you give it a little bang, does that change anything? Seriously?
I tried that.
Yeah.
And then I knocked something else loose.
Oh, well, then you're done now.
I guess that was not good advice.
Tommy, thanks a lot for the call. We're going to take a break here. You know, I have the same problem with our CD and the player in the van, but turns out one of my children put a lollipop stick in the CD holder, so it's...
Did it play it?
Yeah, it sounded pretty good.
Yeah, nice.
All right, let's take a break.
Support for WMC comes from Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts. Providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement, havocandwealthstrategies.com. Saratoga Health and Wellness, providing a 12-week weight loss program run by nutritionists and exercise physiologists, saratogahealthandwellness.com. And Proctor's, presenting the Broadway drama War Horse, now through January 19th, proctors.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, 22 minutes after 2 o'clock. We do our automotive show once a month or so. This is the first one for 2014. Gordon Fricke is here to answer your questions. Back to the phones we go. Leo in Shelburne, you're up.
Yeah, hi. I have a Toyota Tacoma pickup truck, and I have a tire pressure indicator light that keeps blinking at me. It's been doing it for years. It looks like a gesture I've seen on the New Jersey Turnpike, and I want to know if there's some way to pull the bulb or to shut this thing off. I check my tire pressures. My mechanic says that it's some kind of sending unit on the stem of one of the tires that has failed, and it's expensive to replace.
Leo, what year is your vehicle?
It's an 06.
Okay. Each one of those pressure sensors in your tires has a battery in it, and they all have a lifespan, just like any battery. And a lot of the car makers were saying around 6 years would be it. So we are going to start seeing a lot of this with the batteries going dead and or the sensor itself could be failing. And that's why your light is flashing. If the light's just on steady, that means you have a potentially low tire. But the flashing indicates a system problem. I don't know if you can, you can't disable the warning light because it's incorporated in your instrument cluster, and the light fails in the on position if something goes wrong or flashes, unless the bulb decides to burn out on you from being on for so many years. But if you, let's say you disable the system, like the first caller regarding that OnStar computer. If you unplug the computer, the light will probably just stay on instead of flash. But you really can't get the bulb to turn out, to the best of my knowledge, unless you take some things apart. So I think you're kind of stuck with it.
I've got an orange candy cloth wrapper in front of it to try to obscure it.
Well, that's one way to do
it. Well, we do see some cars coming in with black electrical tape covering up certain warning lights.
That won't get you through inspection, though. Leo, thanks a lot for the call. Now, did you say the sensor was actually in the tire?
Each wheel.
Oh, in the wheel, but not the tire.
It's in the wheel. It's either incorporated in the valve stem or it's strapped to the inside of the wheel with a giant band clamp.
Hmm.
So it is an electronic transmitter in each of the wheels.
Wow. And that wouldn't be, at least in New York, would not be a deal breaker.
No, still pass inspection that way.
Let's go to Russ in Waterford. Russ.
Hello there. I got a 2001 Mercury Sable, and check engine light came on. I put a scan tool on it, and it's coming up with an error code that says left bank too lean. And I looked it up, and it's either a vacuum leak or a possibility I might need to clean the mass airflow sensor. But I don't actually know where that mass airflow sensor is located. Is there a simple way to find it? Is it in the throat of the air cleaner?
Yeah, that's easy to find, but a mass airflow sensor on your car, because your vehicle only has one, won't isolate one bank to the other. You've got a lean code for only one bank of your cylinders.
Okay.
So that means that one side of your engine is running too lean according to the computer.
Okay.
So that could be a vacuum leak, but again,
the last time it happened to me, it was a hose off.
Yeah. Yep. And sometimes if the vacuum leak is over on one side of the manifold, it will isolate it and give it a bank one or a bank two lean code. The sensors that do the monitoring could be at fault, but you can't just go throwing sensors at it because you'd be wasting a lot of money. But go back to your first question. The mass airflow sensor is in the intake air track. So you know where the air cleaner is.
I do, yeah.
Follow the air cleaner towards the engine. You're going to see a unit that has a electrical connector to it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And that's the mass airflow sensor. There's a couple of, like, Torx-type screws that hold it in.
Yeah.
They may be tamper-proof. You might need to get a special bit. But if you remove those screws, you can pull that sensor out, and there is a spray that's made.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw the can. It's like $8, and it's the stuff that you should use.
Yes.
And I understand that. I mean, I did some homework on it. The problem is, if you're saying that, which I understand, that in this particular case, there isn't, you know, two sensors. Well, does it make sense to clean this one?
It's a good maintenance no matter what.
Okay. But that's probably not the
problem. But I don't think it's going to solve your lean situation on only one bank of the engine.
Okay. Is there any good way to chase down a vacuum leak other than just feel all the hoses and check them to see whether...
The old-fashioned way, which sometimes still works, is to get a can of intake air cleaner spray.
Okay.
And carefully spray around the manifold, the hoses.
Yeah.
You know, try to see if when you spray a certain area that your engine RPM slightly goes up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If it picks up, right?
Yeah, and that's sucking in the cleaner and satisfying the engine momentarily.
Okay.
And that's about it. You know, it gets more elaborate, but you got to do it, you know, in a shop.
All right, Russ.
Okay, no. Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, good luck. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. One open line, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. John in Saratoga, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi. I'm going to be driving an 07 Camry to the west, actually Colorado, and I was wondering, is there anything special I should do prior to the trip to protect the car, i.e. maybe transmission or whatever? I've heard things, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's always a good idea to get the vehicle to your mechanic in advance of your trip. Give them a little time in case they do find something that the car might need. And it's always good to, if it's ready for an oil change, of course, get that done. All the other fluid levels, extremely important, tire pressures. You know, just your normal wear and tear items should be looked at, because there's a lot of simple things that the mechanic could spot that could really cause you a lot of grief on the road. The drive belt, for example. If the drive belt goes off the pulleys or brakes. You're stranded. You need to be towed. You can't. There's no extra belts. There's only one belt driving everything nowadays. So I would do that. I would just get a good check over, and at least you've done all you can to prevent breakdowns. And if something does happen, you know, at least it'll be something that you didn't fail to prevent.
Thank you.
Yep, John, thank you very much. And Sharon in Saratoga. Sharon, you're up.
Yay. Hi, I just was wondering, I'm thinking of trying to buy an 05 Porsche Cayenne with a lot of miles, like maybe 80,000, I'm saying. But I don't know what I'm getting myself into as far as potential problems with it, and am I going to be able to afford to fix the problems that happen to it?
He's smiling. I think that's an indication right there.
What does that mean? Is that bad?
Well, he's a mechanic, you know, and he does these things.
Oh, yeah.
How old of a Cayenne? Because they haven't been around that long.
Yeah, I think when I was reading about them, I think they said 05s and 06s were good.
Yeah.
If they'd worked any kind of bugs out, if they had any.
Yeah.
So something like that.
You're probably not going to get an S model.
Is the S the turbo? Sport.
Yeah, the S is the turbocharged version.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I just feel like if the turbo fails, then I'm in more trouble.
Well, yeah, it's not just the turbo, but there's a lot of extra stuff on them, which is, you know, they're
okay.
Pretty high-end, very... I think it was the fastest sport utility vehicle
produced.
Oh, it's
an SUV? That's
yeah.
The Porsche SUV?
Yeah.
Oh,
yep.
I remember
yeah,
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lucky you,
yeah.
Sharon. That's
and,
great.
And,
believe it or not, they are based on the Volkswagen Touareg because they're kind of cousin vehicles, and now Volkswagen actually owns Porsche, so now it's a division of Volkswagen. But anyway, we're getting way off track. But
yeah,
I don't see many of those because they're just not in my travels. But
You know, not because they don't fail.
No, I just don't have any in my area. But it's a high-end vehicle, traditionally expensive to maintain and repair. If you're okay with that, if you're accustomed to that type of a vehicle, I don't think there's any real big source areas on these. But I guess in the back of your mind, you know, you could be ready for some expensive stuff potentially. And
okay.
I would get one checked out by your shop or a mechanic that handles these just to you know, maybe spot some big stuff that if you're looking to buy one used, he could steer you in the right direction.
Hmm. Okay, that sounds good. We were looking to replace a pickup truck, basically, and I said to my husband, why don't we get something like that because it can be a V8. Our understanding that it can tow almost 4,000 or can tow 4,000 pounds.
Oh, yeah. I think they tow even more.
Yeah.
And, that's
more
quite an upgrade. That's
yeah.
Terrific. Yeah.
And then you can take it to dinner, too.
That's right.
If you can afford dinner at that point.
Right. True.
Well,
thanks.
That's great. Hey, call us next month. Let us know if you got it. Yeah.
So I will. Thank you.
That's a really good question that I just thought of. Maybe it's not a good question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. So you buy a Porsche. Beautiful car, expensive, great. Something breaks down, it's very expensive. Why should the repair be any more than it would be for a Hyundai just because the car cost 8 times as much?
Exactly. And that is a very good question. There's a couple things that determine the cost of repairs. And one of the big ones, of course, replacement parts. If you need a starter for a Porsche Cayenne or a Hyundai Elantra, there's going to be a giant difference in the cost of that part.
Why?
Well,
they both do the same thing.
It's probably mainly the exclusivity of the. Did I say that right?
Yeah. No. Very good.
Of the
must be public radio.
Yeah. Of the Porsche part, and you're not going to go to any old auto parts store and get one because the numbers are much lower. They might sell 500,000 Hyundais, and they might sell 10,000.
Yeah.
Cayennes or whatever. So the parts are always an issue. And the technology. Some of these high-end car companies have stuff designed very, I guess, maybe high-tech or maybe too high-tech, and they don't give you enough repair information. So mechanics sometimes are ripping their hair out because they can't figure it out. They don't have the right repair information. The support is not there because the high-end companies want the stuff to go back to their dealer network.
In general, as far as an hourly job, are the do the jobs take longer, aside from ripping your hair out and figuring, once you know what to do, do they take longer?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Some stuff is just in a bad location, so you have to tear half the car apart to get to it.
Yeah.
Other times, it's just plain figuring it out and getting the right information. So.
Gotcha. All right, let's go to Marie in Schenectady. Marie, you're on.
Hi. Yeah, I'm here. Since I heard you're knowledgeable, that expert here on the German cars, a 2002 Passat, drives like a tank, pretty good. I got low mileage because when I got sick, mileage curtailed. But anyway, Mr. Fricke, the car still runs. I've only got about 35,000 miles on it. But I have an ongoing problem with ingress water. There was a big suit. Finally, Volkswagen stepped up to the plate and took part of the heat, class action suit, all the maybe you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
It went back to the Audi 99. I've got the 2002, so I don't have the roof where the damn water didn't have,
darn.
You know, yeah. I know the whole story. What the heck can I do? Look, water comes in on the, I had the firewall sealed. I said, what the hell? Well, why do we need a, what's a firewall with a new car? I know about the frame and I think it was manufactured, not in Mexico, but in Germany, Wolfsburg.
Okay.
Anyway, ongoing problem. They haven't settled that suit. I wasn't one of the many that got the $10,000, the one that brought the suit. Finally, they put it in the courts. Anyway, the water coming in.
Okay.
I think possibly the rear and back of drivers gets wet, the rug.
Yep.
They took all the rug out, did it. Again, the water persists again, water coming in on the passenger side.
Oh, boy.
My mechanic, good guy, said, Marie, it could be a fine leak in your rear window. I said, but Rick, I said, the trunk is dry, so on and so forth. He said, Marie, it could come in through a channel.
Right.
What do I do?
Okay.
Can you give me some insight on what has happened with this problem with
Yes.
Okay.
Here's what the main problem was, and it sounds to me like your car does not have a sunroof.
No, it didn't, darling.
Okay.
No.
All right. The sunroof was the major culprit.
Gotcha.
So
I know that.
Now that you don't have one, you need to get the car water tested and see where it's leaking.
It was.
Have you
and
ever?
I went through years before Mr. Lang and sold Volkswagen and all.
All right.
You're not
all right. Let's not names about.
Has the windshield ever been replaced?
I thought about that. In the front, I had a cracked windshield,
okay.
You know, contraction, expansion,
Yep.
It wasn't,
Here's,
in the front, yes, dear.
Here's what you need to do.
It
needs to be water tested and very thoroughly.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think you're going to get anywhere with the class action suit because I think it was mainly all sunroof cars.
It was.
But somebody needs to water test the car and see if they can find out where it's coming from. And I'll give you the most possible areas. Windshield is a big culprit because they get changed a lot.
Thought about
from
that
stone
recently,
hits.
Yeah, okay.
And also door seals and
that this is it. I've went through the whole schmear, the whole damn thing.
Okay,
with
darn.
And Volkswagen,
okay. And the
you know, from windows replacing windows and
yep.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The last area is the cowl where the air comes into the heating system, and that needs to be checked.
We talking about the air pleatum?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that was the first thing in 07 when they finally said. Go in and have it cleaned out, and they increase the size of it?
I think that's you've done everything you can do
including being a mechanic, except, you know, going up
getting
access
it,
to the garage.
Other than getting it re-water tested, because if they can't find the leak, which that is possible, it's very elusive.
I'm aware. That's what the mechanic, Rick, told me, yeah.
Okay. Well, Rick was on to something. Hey, Marie, thanks a lot, and good luck. And how would one water test a car, Gordon?
Well, what I do is I put it in my wash bay, and I set up a sprayer.
Yep.
And I spray the car like it was out in the rain.
Yeah.
And sometimes I will leave it alone for hours. And, of course, now that we're on metered water, I got to be careful doing that. But and then you need to go in the car with a flashlight and maybe have some panels removed and look all over the place to see if you can see droplets coming in. And a lot of times you can find the leak.
So you wouldn't just drive it into a lake?
Well, that might be the permanent resolution to the problem.
Well, that's an interesting one, because I've seen cars where the water comes in the passenger side. It doesn't seem to be in the windshield.
No.
But the cowl might be something that...
Yeah, the cowl drains can plug up from leaves, those little helicopters that fly down from the oak trees or whatever, and pine needles. And the rainwater will pile up in there, and it'll run into where the air would normally come in for your heating system.
Brilliant. Yes.
So that's what I would be checking.
Zach, take a note. I'll have to check that on my wife's car when I get home. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. More exciting action with Gordon Fricke coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring houseplants, seeds, and seedling starter kits. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Closed Sundays. A gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. Riverbend Animal Hospital, Route 9 in Hadley, Massachusetts, providing small animal medicine and wellness care, general and referral surgery, canine rehabilitation, laser therapy, and dentistry, riverbendanimal.com. And the Linda, presenting blues man Guy Davis, Friday, January 17th at 8 p.m., thelinda.org for more information.
All right, let's just try to simmer down now and finish the program. Gordon Fricke is here, 800-348-2551. Everyone, just take a deep breath. You'll get your chance. Let's go to Nick in Albany. Nick, you're on.
Hi. First of all, thanks for the show. Since Click and Clack have disappeared,
you're
the only one around. And, you know, you get to the point better and quicker. So
we appreciate it.
I've got a problem with just about every car I've driven that I can remember. Even if the windshield wipers are a couple of weeks old, every once in a while, and usually quite a bit, you get this juddering noise every once in a while, and the wipers seem to be almost skipping across the windshield. You get that loud noise. I'll replace them, and they seem fine for a couple of days, and then it'll start up again. You know, just intermittently, not all the time. What do you do about that?
Yeah.
Is there something on the windshield? Or
I know the noise, and I've been through it a bunch of times. Here's what you need to do. You need to look at how the windshield wiper blade meets the windshield.
Okay.
And it can't be on any type of an angle.
Angle.
And a lot of times what I've had to do is bend the arm.
Okay.
And, you know, tweak it so that arm is at a right angle to the windshield. Because if it's on an angle, the blade's going to skip in one direction and go smoothly in the other.
In the other one.
And
okay.
And you may just have to look straight across those things. Get right down there and look across it, and then you'll see it. And you'll need to just kind of tweak it and make it at a nice straight angle to the windshield.
Okay, and I wondered about that. I wondered if, as the blade rests against the windshield after it's been on there a while, if it sort of automatically kind of leans to one side, and then you start to have that problem.
It does, because when the wipers park, they're on the down sweep usually. So the blades are bent in that direction.
Okay.
And if, let's say you get an area where you don't get much rain, say you're in Arizona or somewhere, they may stay in that position for weeks. And then they will assume that position and skip going the other direction. So that's also true.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Nick, thank you very much. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is with us on Vox Pop today. Hugh in Lake Luzerne, you're on.
Hi, I was interested in the tire question. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2010 Honda Civic. It's a nice car. Bought a new set of tires from a local dealer. And right away, 2 days later, I got a TPMS signal. They tested all the tires, said they were fine. I don't know what to do about it. I live in Lake Luzerne, and I bought the car in Albany. It's a long way to go for a dealer. I don't know what to do about the signal, which is some kind of a tire pressure issue.
Okay, Hugh. Is the light on steady, or is it flashing?
Steady.
Steady light. Okay. That usually indicates a pressure issue. And what kind of car is it again?
Civic.
All right. The Civic, I don't believe, falls into this category, but there are a lot of cars that have full-size spares with a sensor in the spare wheel. and the spare tire pressure never gets checked. It goes low, turns the light on. But I don't think your Civic has a full spare, but you should open the trunk and look. Other than that, it's got to get diagnosed. Somebody's got to go with the equipment. And number one, confirm that the tire pressures are really correctly set and that all the sensors are sending out the proper signal. So unfortunately, Hugh, other than checking to make sure the spare tire doesn't have a sensor in it, and if it does, make it to the correct pressure as your other tires, you're going to have to get it diagnosed because it's an electronic system.
Well, thanks for that wisdom about the spare. I don't think that occurred to any of us.
Now, I don't think your car has it, but I've run into this on a lot of cars. They got five sensors, and all of them have to be at the same pressure.
So if he just took the wheel out, the spare out, and put it 50 feet away and then turned the car on and it went away, that would tell him?
No, that would actually indicate that the signal was lost if he does have a pressure sensor in the spare. So.
Oh.
But I don't think he does, but I would, out of curiosity, open the trunk and look. You
okay.
Never know.
I'm curious. I'll do that.
Thanks, Hugh. We appreciate the call. You know, it just seems like one more reason to get nervous. In the old days, your car, you look at the tire. Oh, gosh, my right rear tire's a little low. Better put some air in it. You check the pressure as you're putting the air in it.
Yeah.
You got sensors. You got more things to worry about. You got to go to Gordon Fricke and pay some money and have it checked.
Well, this all started with the Ford Firestone fiasco. I think it was in the 90s maybe or early 2000s with the soft tires causing rollovers, and Ford blamed Firestone. Firestone blamed Ford. And it was found that a lot of it was from nobody ever checking their tire pressures. I think that's what sparked it.
All right. Yep. So there are some good reason behind
this.
All right. Cliff in Port Charlotte, Florida. Really?
Yes.
Wow. You're listening online, I would assume.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's a little far for the signal.
Right you are. But, Cliff, you're on with Gordon Fricke. Go ahead.
Yeah, did I hear him say that the tire pressures have to all be the same in order for the tire pressure reporting system to work correctly? I mean, you might want to have different pressure in the front tires than the back tires.
Yes, and I should have clarified that. You need to set the tire pressures according to the sticker on the door jamb of the car.
Yeah, okay.
Because some vehicles use staggered tire pressures.
Right. My question is about the Honda 2000 Honda Accord, my mother-in-law's car. It hasn't been used a lot, so it got less than 40,000 miles on it. And it steers very hard. It's got a power steering, of course. And my experience has been that when you back the car up and you turn the wheel to, you know, cramp it off, it reaches a point where it all of a sudden wants to go further than you want it to. And in my experience, this has been a sign of ball joints having a problem. Would you concur on that? Or?
Now, what are you thinking, that the ball joints are starting to bind and they're not allowing the wheels to steer freely?
Something like that. It steers very hard for a normal car.
Yeah. Definitely. Sticking or binding steering and suspension parts could be the blame here, and it's going to need to be raised and checked, you know, by a mechanic for the most part to see if there are any of those things sticking. But it is possible, and that'll make it so your steering wheel doesn't self-center anymore. In other words, if you go down the road and you steer to the right, if you kind of let go of the wheel, most cars try to go back to center for you. But if you get something with a stuck front end part, it'll stay wherever you point it. And that can be a little dangerous.
Yeah, this one tracks pretty good. I've got an appointment to take it into my favorite Toyota dealer and have them do an evaluation and maybe a repair. Do you have any idea what the replacing the ball joints might run?
Well, I don't off the top of my head because there's – and that car, there's four of them, uppers and lowers.
Right.
And I can't guess and tell you. But I would let somebody that you trust look at it, and they'll give you the right answer.
That's what I'm going to do. Thank you.
Hey, Cliff, thanks a lot for listening all the way down in Port Charlotte, Florida. That's very nice. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke, our guest, 1-800-348-2551, the number. Dominic in New Lebanon, you're on.
Hi, Ray. We're on the phone, my wife and I, and first of all, we enjoy hearing you every day on the various shows that you're on.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
But we have a question with that TPMS again. We have a Honda Civic 09, and sometimes the tire pressure maintenance system light will come on and it'll stay on for maybe a day and a half. Then it'll go off. It'll be off for half a day, three quarters of a day, and then it'll come back on again. Did I hear earlier you were saying that Gordon there? Did he say that not to worry about that? Or then I thought I heard later on talking to another gentleman. You said no, go in and get it checked out.
Yeah, no, actually, you shouldn't ignore it, because if the system is working properly, it's going to give you a heads up on a potentially soft tire. And the colder it gets, the lower the tire pressures are. And I forget whose law that was. Bernoulli, maybe one of those physicists or scientists.
But that's a good one.
Anyway, as the temperature goes down, the pressure in a vessel also goes down. And that's what's happening to your tires. So I would, with a very accurate pressure gauge, make sure they're all at the right pressure. And you can use the sticker on your door jamb will tell you what those pressures are. And in the winter time, when it's really cold, it doesn't hurt to put a few extra pounds in each tire. But I think maybe you may have one that's on the very brink of going out of that pressure spec, and on a colder day, it turns your light on. A warmer day, it gets it back up closer to where it should be and turns the light off.
Okay.
So that's what I think I would do. That could be very easy.
Okay, sir.
Thanks a lot,
Dominic. Thank you very much. Appreciate your help.
We appreciate you listening. Now, that's an interesting question. You said it's okay in very cold weather to throw a few extra pounds in your tire.
Yes.
What about in these days of the polar vortex where one day it's -3 and the next day it's 42?
Yes.
Say I put more air in that tire when it's -3. What happens the next day when it's 40?
Well, that tire pressure monitoring system works in parameters like everything else. So it's looking for a spread. So let's say the desired pressure is 32. It's not going to turn the light on until you're down in the 20s or up higher in the high 30s. It's going to give you leeway.
But I'm not actually so concerned about the light as the safe amount of air in a tire.
Yes, true. So your question is, where do you put it?
Well, in other words, is it still okay when it's very cold to throw more air in that tire if the next day it's 45 degrees warmer?
Yes, because that much of a temperature increase is not going to make anything dangerous at all.
Okay.
Yeah. The worst case is if you're on the brink of needing air on a hot day or a warm day and you never check them and then you hit a severe cold snap, now you're going to have a bunch of soft tires.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous.
All right. Let's go to David in Glenmont. David, you're on.
Hey, how are you today?
Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you. I have a 2001 Subaru Outback that I inherited from my uncle. 90,000 miles approximately. It's automatic with a 3-liter in it. And I've noticed that when you're cruising at highway speeds, when you take your foot off the accelerator, it almost feels like it's standard, you know, where you kind of get like a little bump or a little settling. And I'm trying to figure out whether or not, I mean, I've never driven another automatic that, you know, when you take your foot off the gas pedal, it basically just coasts. You don't get a little bump.
So you're getting the feeling like you were still in gear if you had a manual transmission car?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. And I don't know if that's inherent to this particular vehicle or if it's, cause for a problem down the road.
I don't think that's abnormal, because just about every car today has what's called a lockup torque converter. And in your higher gears under easy cruise or light throttle, it locks the torque converter up. So you've got that non-slip like you do with a manual transmission. You don't have the torque converter that soaks up the shock. And what that does is a torque converter, I think you lose about 10% of your RPM through the torque converter. So when it locks it up, it's just like you have a manual transmission car in fifth gear. So when you let up on the gas, you're just feeling that deceleration or that little backlash.
Right.
To add to that, your car is all-wheel drive. So there's a drive shaft going to the rear, and you got axles going out to each wheel. There's more drivetrain there. So you may not be feeling anything abnormal with that car.
Okay.
That's what I think.
I noticed it, and I just wanted to address it if it was an issue.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Before it got any worse.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks,
well, I appreciate
David.
The help. So thanks so much.
We appreciate the call. And Ted in Shelburne, Vermont. Ted, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I've got an 09 Pontiac Vibe, and I bought wheels and pressure sensor, snow. I bought wheels with my snow tires and had the pressure rig put in. And that thing, and I believe I found in the deep parts of the owner's manual that tire chains could interfere, like the metal spinning, with the tire pressure system. And I have studded tires, and I believe that that's somehow what's doing it, because I always get, and it's quite sporadic, it's not with the temperature or the speed or stuff, and I'll get some flashing of the indicator, and then it will go on steady, and then after a while it will self-heal and go back to black.
Yeah.
And I have a suspicion that it could be that spinning metal of studded tires.
Ted, did you call on this subject?
I think I did.
Yes, I remember.
You have a tremendous memory.
I remember this question.
Well, I just heard that again, and I keep thinking that my thoughts might be relevant.
We have a fair amount of vehicles that we service with studded snow tires.
And no problem?
I don't recall anybody mentioning that, but the physics of it could make some sense, because you do have a lot of rotating steel around the circumference of the tire.
Yeah,
it is entirely possible, and I should look in various owner's manuals.
I just thought, because I couldn't, I've never got anybody to confirm it. But as I say, I hate to have people fretting and driving a big distance to a dealer if this is a possible solution.
I mean, it would be interesting when the light was on to scan it and see what, if there's any code information in it, but that's going to cost you some money.
Right, I'm not up for...
Yeah, and if you're not that concerned or interested, which you probably don't need to be, it's a great thought.
I like to understand stuff, and that's all.
Yeah.
And I don't need to know, but when these were new, in the first week I had them, and it's been three seasons or so, and it still is the same show.
And when you put your summer tires on, it never happens?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. I wouldn't be surprised if it's interfering with the signal on that particular car and those particular studs.
That could be let someone else relax kind of too on there. I mean, you still have to watch the pressure.
Exactly.
Also, I leave the pressure a little high sometimes, but if I'm going out on a really iffy night when I should stay home, I might drop the pressure a little, because I think those edges of the tires dig in a little bit instead of riding on the middle of them.
That's what they thought in this long time ago, and maybe there's a little truth to that.
With the studs on it, perhaps.
Yeah, I wouldn't discount that either. I think you're on the right track.
Ted, thank you very much. Let's go to Karen in Middle Grove. Karen, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. My daughter is going on a wonderful trip, whatever. She's gone for 4 months. I have her car. I have no room in my garage for her car, so I was just going to park it next to my garage. Anything we should do to or for the car, because it's going to sit there all winter? We're just assuming the battery will be dead in the spring and the snow will come and the snow will go. But then I got thinking maybe we should be nicer to her car than that.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's a bunch of stuff you can do, and some of it's practical if you're handy and others aren't. But if the battery is really old, this is going to finish it off. But if the battery is pretty recent, it's not a good bad idea to remove it and bring it inside so it doesn't sit out in all the temperature extremes. And if you could periodically charge it, that'd be wonderful. But as for the rest of the car, you should definitely put a fuel stabilizer in the gas and run the engine before you stop using it, so that stabilizer gets everywhere. And it's nice to increase the tire pressures so you try to avoid some flat spots. So, I mean, those are the three main things that are practical for you as, the owner of the car to do to help preserve it till she gets back.
Great. So fuel stabilizer, air in the tires, and disconnect the battery if it's a new one.
And take it out of the car if you can and bring it in where it's not going to freeze. Bring it, put it in your basement or somewhere. You don't want a battery on your kitchen shelf.
No.
But somewhere, out of the way.
Yeah.
Very good.
All right.
Well, thank you very much. It's a big help. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Now, I mean, should she drive it?
Well, I recommend it to some people. They let you use it, but
use it.
Yeah, yeah. But
I got a car.
But they said no, we don't want to do.
But I mean, should she just take it out every week? And would it be better to do that than to leave the battery on the kitchen table?
A car likes to remain in service because the brakes are going to sit out there and get rusty. And yes, you're right. And it shouldn't just be started up and left running for 5 minutes. It needs to go get used.
Okay, and that's a great way to end our program. Support comes from Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties, hvfa.com. Buttermilk Falls Inn, Milton, a 75-acre Hudson Riverfront resort with lodging, a farm-to-table restaurant and spa, buttermilkfallsinn.com. And TSL, Time and Space Limited in Hudson, New York, hosting its annual membership brunch January 19th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., timeandspace.org. Thanks to the great Gordon Fricke for being here. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy for running the controls. Karen Carmelli answered the phones. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. And remember, you can check in online on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. And, leave a comment, get in touch. We'll see you tomorrow.